Good morning. This is class three of Ourselves, Our Souls, and Bodies. We moved today from the vestry room down here. Come on in. We moved from the vestry room down here because we ran out of room in the vestry room. And even this will be a little bit tight, but we'll do the very best we can. Today we're going to talk about the talk. The first two classes, I tried to do a little bit of unpacking of different ideas and concepts, rooting this broader conversation about sex and sexuality in ideas that we inherit from our tradition, theological concepts and framework to help us enter into conversations with our kids, also to help us understand more deeply and more firmly what it is that we believe and why. First class, we did some of that conceptual stuff. The second class, we started to talk about, and we used that marker board to talk about what we think sex is for, and then what some of the shadow sides are. And that was, I thought, a really wonderful and rich conversation. It was really rewarding to me to get a sense of where everybody's coming from, and I felt like we had some great clarity and consensus as a group about where we feel like the goodness and the holy purposes of sex are, and where the shadow sides are, and how they are connected, how the something good has that sort of clear underbelly that is difficult or challenging. I'm really grateful for your willingness to enter into that conversation, and we'll keep going today. Come on in. Yeah. We have a few more chairs located near the back and then intermittent, and here we go. I wonder if revisiting the first two classes, if there are any questions or comments, anything that you've been wrestling with. The last class was 2 weeks ago, so it's not necessarily fresh in your mind. But I wonder if there's anything you want to bring up that stuck with you, that lingered with you, a comment that you've been wanting to make or a question that you had. Again, apologies for the warmth of the room. I apologize that it's so warm in here. It's like we can't quite get temperature dialed in this building. Anything that you have today? Yes, please.
So I was thinking about the discussion that we had in the last meeting.
Yeah.
And talking about obviously sort of the most ideal circumstances and context, and then the shadow side.
Yeah.
But somewhere between marriage and sex trafficking.
Yes.
Is probably most of the behavior that most of us will encounter, and probably where young people tend to have the most questions.
Sure.
And I was just wondering, when we're not in one of those, best or worst scenarios, how to have those conversations. And how to about a positive experience in a relationship.
Sure. And that's a great point that that we can probably safely assume in our society that that it's somewhere that the vast majority of sexual experiences are somewhere in between these two. And how do we create healthy conversations about that? That's hopefully one of the things we're going to talk about today and next week. Other comments or questions? Yes, Deb.
So in thinking about it, because I took a photograph and posted it on Facebook, so I sort of got to look at the notice board a little bit longer. And it sort of struck me that you could take out the word sex at the top and replace it with food. And all the comments underneath would probably be the same in terms of healthy and unhealthy.
Yeah.
And the relationships and the structure and the control and the just all the dynamics sort of similar in terms of that particular conversation. And it struck me this while I was eating a bag of potatoes. That, I plan like really good and healthy meals for my kids that would be, I guess, sort of analogous to the sort of marriage, super healthy, positive meals. But still, I definitely, will watch a football game and have completely nutritionally devoid potato chips, which is probably the least nutritional food out there. So then I started sort of thinking about, well, you know, maybe there is part of the conversation that acknowledges what I'm calling signature sex. And so it's like, how to have
good analogy.
Conversation and not say that, okay, this is the only place that we live and function, and to sort of not sort of make that equate into sex trafficking and sort of broaden that spectrum and have that conversation include sort of the completely devoid stuff that we're still facing.
Mm-hmm. So I think that's a funny and it has real deep resonance as an analogy. There's a lot of really great parallels between those two. It illuminates some of the momentary bad decisions or making decisions that you're not necessarily proud of, but that you do almost on impulse. What I want to encourage is for us to reclaim a sort of existence that is on a higher plane than animals, and that we don't actually have to succumb to instincts, instinctive sexual desire, and gratify that in quite the way that we might be willing to, because the ethical and moral shadow side of snacking with potato chips is not directly equivalent to potato chip sex. It's a fun analogy. It's a great analogy in lots of ways, but it starts to fall apart a little bit. And I think a Christian concept or construct of marriage is one that values, and we talked about all of the positive values, the deeply relational, the deeply relational and purposeful ideas of sex as bringing people together, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Having that capacity to operate on a number of different levels of personhood and identity, and trying for ourselves to reclaim that, and also trying to instill that in our kids in some way. Understanding that a 12 or 13 year old or 14 year old, when we're starting to have that conversation, is not going to process it in the same way that they might as an 18 or 19 or 20 year old, but that we're building something together. I want to have this conversation today, and I want to hold that analogy in the back of our minds. And if you feel like it's funny, if we approach this conversation from a variety of different places of understanding and acceptance, and so we're going to all enter into this in a slightly different way. What I want to do is, regardless of whether you feel like sex is most appropriately bounded by the context of marriage or not, that we elevate, because we are Christians, that we elevate our understanding that sex has deeply spiritual and emotional implications, and that if nothing else, we want our kids to understand that. That potato chip sex still functions deeply within our souls. That when God makes soul and body and conjoins it together, that what you do in that potato chip sex moment or that experience still has deep implications for your soul. So, for yourself, for your own health, and also for the health of the other person. Great point. It's a great point. This whole idea of how are we going to talk to our kids and not necessarily only ever say, you're going to have sex when you're married, and you're not going to have sex until you're married, and if you have sex before you're married, then you know, blah, 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 like heavy-handed moralism. But we want to create a whole broader conversation that helps them understand why Christians have long understood that to be the right place, and also what sex means and what it's about, what it's for. That's also a bigger conversation as well. Yes. And we have the product. Yes.
Since the topic is
conception.
Yes, thank you. Right after Bob and I got married, by accident, I just came across a book called Where I Came From.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know what this book is, it's a storybook meant for small children that's beautifully done, that talks about
mommy and daddy falling in love and coming together, and because, you know, their love was so great that they wanted to be closer, and they wanted something beautiful to come of their closeness. And it goes through, very factual but beautifully put, how conception comes about and where I came from.
Is it the cartoon book?
It is. It
now
is.
It's just on me.
Chubby people. Well, and what happened to us is right after we got married, we went to a party, and the little kids wanted to read a story.
Oh, boy.
The kids handed me this book.
That's called hazing.
Yes.
I started to read it, and my jaw dropped, and so I said, excuse me, and I went to talk to the mother. I said, is this a baby? She goes, oh, yes, it's their favorite book. And these were little children, but I mean, it's beautiful. I know it sounds...
So I want to... This is a great launching off place. So... I want to hold that story because it's a great illuminative story. Let's first do a little bit of a little exercise of remembering. I wonder how you remember having a talk or a series of talks with your parents about sex. You had zero talks. All right.
Okay, well, I can jump up on that.
Yep.
Well, my family's from California. I mean, from a very young age, I remember reading that book with my parents, and it was just open conversation. I mean, really, until I didn't want to have the conversation anymore, like, when I became a teenager. What? I really don't, like, really young. And I have an older brother, too, so I think I probably, it started before I needed it, but I was in. So, and it was around this book, and then also just kind of open. I usually went to my dad and my mom.
Okay. Other experiences?
I don't talk at all. I want to see those hands.
If you never had the talk, if your parents never talked to you about sex at all. Holly, apparently like father, like son.
But I have an older sister who was in nursing school.
Oh, well, yeah. Yes. All right. So if you never had that conversation that you can recall, I wonder where you learned anything. I wonder where you learned. But seriously, I wonder where you learned facts or ideas or information, or where you remember receiving some sort of framework with which to understand sex.
From my peers in school.
From peers in school.
Or more experience, or perhaps their parents taught.
Okay. All right.
Well, mine was through my parents, but it was a group thing with older brothers. So.
Okay.
Woman talk was done with my brothers so they could understand that I needed privacy. And then a letter was sent to my brother in the Marines. And to find out that my brother had this letter in his locker, I just cringed thinking of me in his barracks as he shared this letter with him. You know, so it was embarrassing.
Okay.
Seventh grade health class.
How many of you had a health class in which you talked about sex? Heavy on anatomy.
Yeah.
And often heavy on abstinence. What I remember most, though, is that I learned like the names of different parts. Okay?
So my parents were very open. We had the talk. I had three sisters, so four girls. They wanted to be very careful. But I can remember still not understanding why God would let someone have a baby that wasn't married as a child. I can still remember that. Even though I'd been told everything, I still didn't get it.
Okay.
You know, whatever that developmental piece is.
Okay. Hopefully we'll talk about ways to recognize that that's possible. By being squeamish about talking about things, we leave a lot of things open to imagination and to peer education, which is crap. Total crap. Yes?
As a labor and delivery nurse who's delivered lots of teenagers, you better learn their language quick. Because
because they have a lot of lingo that means totally different things than what you thought it meant.
Sure.
So that peer education is real helpful.
Yeah, well, the peer education is helpful in terms of understanding what they're talking about, but the peer education in terms of actually equipping our kids to know anything truthful, factual, is that's where it's enormously suspect. I mean, I remember what we talked about, like my friends, and that was like completely worthless in terms of anything other than, you know, false machoism and all that sort of teenage boy stuff.
Can I share something with you? It may be helpful because it's a unique situation, but it might mirror potentially others. So I did not have a talk with my parents. In my culture, it's not done. Also, we did not learn in school. In my country, we don't have sex ed in school at all. We had anatomy, but it's just anatomy. So I learned it through reading. Literally reading the scientific account.
Was it reading that you had to initiate on your own?
On my own. Like for example, and sort of under the blanket reading advice for newly married couples, that sort of thing. And so I was a pretty late bloomer in life in more ways than one. And so I kind of learned on the late side how things happen. And I don't regret it. But it's very different from how people might be initiated much earlier. And
yeah.
I intend to do it this way with her. I want to do it earlier. But
so exposure, cultural and societal exposure to sex is just so enormously early in our society that we can't. I think the hope that we can wait until they're that we are confident of their maturity to absorb information. Like if we wait that long, we're toast.
Right.
So.
I agree, but it was very different.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay. I want you to, in the back of your mind, if you're dreading this, because either you have no frame of reference, your parents never had the talk with you, or that just you're enormously filled with dread about it just in general, that you start thinking about the ways in which you frame core values with your children about other things, about other major aspects of life. How do you talk about the proper use of money with your kids? How do you talk about violence and the use of violence with your kids? How do you talk about forgiveness with your kids? How do you talk about major aspects of their life and try to form them as people who have had virtue instilled in them and an understanding instilled in them? And then this is an extension of those conversations. I just want to sort of lessen the anxiety about this particular topic just because it's so laden with shame and emotion. And for us to embrace it as another opportunity for us to instill in our kids an understanding of value that we do in lots of other ways. I'm going to show you this video in just a few minutes. We're not actually going to talk about conception necessarily per se, having a conversation about explicitly about conception. But these videos, it's from this organization called Birds and Bees, which is local in Dallas. And they're actually lovely in their own very simplified, fairly conservative way of understanding and framing these conversations. But it's a mother-daughter. And what the organization is about is trying to help build layers of relationship that we engage in with our kids so that it's not all like that we don't have to do everything in one talk. And to build layers of recognizing that children are developing, and what they do a really great job of, these two ladies in Birds and Bees, is giving things for us to do no matter how old our kids are, building to when we're having more sort of detailed conversations with our kids when they're ready for that. So I'm going to show you a video show you a clip here in just a few minutes of a conversation that this woman had to have with her 5-year-old that was way sooner than she was ready to have a conversation with a 5-year-old because of something that happened in that 5-year-old's life. So you think you're in control. We think we're in control of when we're going to have these conversations. And the truth is that we're not in control. And so the sooner we can equip ourselves to have the conversations, no matter how small our kids are, the better off we'll be, because we want to give them tools and resources to understand wherever they are, whatever age they are. So, a few tips that have flowed out of this particular thing, but flowed out of a lot of other reading. I have my pile of books here, and in particular, I've been using, when thinking about how to have the talk and what goes into talk, questions kids ask about sex, and 10 talks parents must have with their children about sex and character. Great resources. First, and I have to own this one, as something that we are just beginning to work on, and I actually think we're a little bit behind the curve, but you know, I had to learn it as I was getting ready for this class. What do you call genitalia with small children? But what do most of us call them?
Their bottom.
Their bottom or their privates. That's your private area. Those are your privates. That's what many people, some of you are already like, no, we say vagina all the time. Most parents don't. And the sooner we can actually start using the proper terminology, the sooner we can say penis and vagina with our children, just and try to not giggle, try to not be weird about it, but use it just, and you can have cute play words that you and your family have, but you also need to be using on a consistent basis the anatomical words too. And that, there is no too early age for that. We teach our kids what an elbow is. We teach our kids what an ear is. We teach our kids, you know, the kids are learning that there are names for everything, and then there's like no word for this other than privates. And I think it does a great disservice. So important, first step, no matter how young your kids are, call it a penis, call it a vagina. Here's where I'm like, this like got thrown in my face recently. I mean, my older daughter, taking a bath recently, has really started, I mean, she's 7.5. She's looking at her vagina and she's really starting to like notice it and ask questions about it. And like, we're already behind the curve because we haven't really introduced her to the word vagina, and we don't use it on a consistent basis. So we're trying to catch up now and try to help her understand what it is. Don't spring the talk out of nowhere. You can't. It has to come as a continuation of lots of early important conversations. How many of you, your kids have asked you, where do babies come from? Of course, especially if you have older children. How old were your kids when they first asked, where do babies come from? I wonder. Seven? Five?
It usually comes on someone having a baby.
Yes.
Yeah. One of my friends early on today said the three holes. That there are three holes in a woman's body. One where the baby comes out, one where the pee-pee comes out, and one where the tooth comes out. And that was the three-year-old explanation I gave.
Okay. All right. So how many of you have either heard or would default to where do babies come from? The baby is in mommy's tummy. So these ladies in Birds and Bees, they say one of their primary missions with their organization is to get the baby out of the tummy. And that cracked me up. Because they say the baby's not in a tummy, the baby's in a uterus. And you're confusing the kid if you say the baby is in the tummy, because when we talk about where does food go, the food goes in the tummy. And it's like massively confusing for a kid who's trying to process, where's all this stuff inside there? Is the baby in the same place that the food is? Like it's, we need to create consistent frameworks, anatomical frameworks, and emotional and spiritual frameworks. We need to use consistent language. The baby is in the uterus. Help them learn true things, because if you're teaching them true things, factual things, then you become a reliable source of information. When you're not a reliable source of information, guess what? They don't ask you anymore. If you're a reliable source of information, they'll keep coming to you because they know you'll give them answers, forthright, truthful answers. So the baby is in the uterus, and she talks about how, I mean, she goes ahead and says, you know, and then the baby comes out the birth canal, and she starts to really teach. Her kids were five, and or her girls were five or six, and she was really giving them helpful information. And you can determine that, but get the baby out of the belly, get the baby out of the tummy. Look for teaching opportunities even with our youngest kids. They make a big point about trying to connect and talk about the natural process of new life. So these ladies have this great idea that we need to be talking about how all life has the possibility and the potential to make new life. And so cutting open an apple and there are seeds inside. So introducing, and if you plant a garden at home, talking about seeds, talking about eggs. When you have eggs and you're looking at birds and birds' eggs, talking about and introducing seeds and eggs, natural processes. All life has the potential and the capacity to make new life. And that's a conversation that we can do with our kids when they're super little. Be ready for the question of how did the baby get in there? How many of you? That was the question. All right. So, and this comes back to an earlier question, you know, how did the baby get in there? And that's not necessarily a question that comes up when you're ready to have a talk about all of the emotional, spiritual, and physical implications of sex. But we need to have an answer that is reasonable, age-appropriate, and factual. So they actually, these two ladies, have what I thought was a great answer that you could potentially massage for yourself. But because they've been teaching and talking about seeds and eggs and life coming from all, like all life having the potential to come from other life, they said the seed that is deep inside the daddy meets an egg that is deep inside the mommy, and they fit together to become a baby. And that was the thing that they said to their five-year-old. Now, when the kid was eight and asked, no, like, okay, so how did the seed and the egg, like, then we talked about how the seed is inside daddy's penis and the egg is inside daddy's vagina, and that's how they, like... Yes, flip that. Sorry. Yes, you're paying attention. It was a test. But giving them, if they're already starting to use terminology, the language of boys have a penis, girls have a vagina, then where do the seeds and eggs, where are they? And how does that work? And but each conversation builds upon the last. So you're talking to your kids about how new life comes from all life. You're talking about how men and women, with regard to babies, men and women have seeds and eggs themselves, and that's how babies are made. And then later you talk about how a baby would get made and how that seed and egg come together. You're not offering and unpacking lots of that in lots of the way in the ways that you will when they're 11, 12, or 13, or 16. But you're laying the groundwork, because these conversations have to build upon each other. Sex for kids is the way I think that most of us are going to enter into the conversation about sex is going to be talking about babies. And you're going to eventually be able to get to the conversation about sex that's not tied to babies after you move through, I think, and what these helped me understand, all these books, is the way a kid understands things is they can see a baby and they want it, their natural curiosity takes over, and we can then begin that long arc of a conversation through talking about that. Questions so far? All right. So we need to give kids tools to understand conversations they will hear among peers and older kids. And here I want to show you this little clip of this video. Oh. Yeah.
don't know these things. Let me just tell you a quick story. A little girl... ...garden, first day of kindergarten. And so she walked into the building with her parents. It was a very exciting day. She walked down the hall, and she walked into her kindergarten class, but her best friend walked into another class. So this little girl was sort of upset. The parents comforted her and told her, don't worry about it. Kindergarten is all about making new friends, and you're going to make new friends in kindergarten. Well, 3 weeks into kindergarten, the little girl came home. She was having a snack and visiting with her mother, talking about her day. When suddenly the little girl said, Mommy, I'm making new friends at school today, but I don't think you're going to let me play at her house. And the mother was surprised by that and said, well, really, well, why not? And the little girl said, well, Mommy, after school, her 17-year-old brother watches her, and she watches her 17-year-old brother have sex. Oh. Yes, that was the answer. And I hope I heard lots of gulps and gasps out there, because, of course, that was a terrible thing to hear about at school. And I know just how terrible that was, because this was my little girl. This was little Jill, my question asker. And she was just eating her cookie and telling me about her day, and this is what she said. Of course, I went straight to the floor to sit down. You know how the blood goes out of your legs and you can't stand up anymore. So from the floor, I'm talking to Jill, and I said, Jill, I am so sad to hear about your friend. And as soon as I can walk, I will call the school. But I'm also glad that you knew that wasn't a good situation. How did you know that wasn't a good situation? Well, she was just eating her cookies and talking, and she said, well, you said that sex is supposed to be for people who are married, and they're not married, I asked. Of course she did. She said, also, Mommy, Daddy said it's very private, and no one should ever watch. So she had these two thoughts that she heard at home. First of all, that it was intended for marriage, and also that it was private, and no one ever watches. And what she heard at school was different, right? Now, where did she hear it's private, and no one should watch? I thought about that a while, and I remembered that when we would watch just regular TV, you know, just, we were pretty conservative, so we were watching nothing racy on TV. But even still, maybe in the middle of a Ranger baseball game or the Olympics, there would be a commercial. And I would be in a movie or a TV show, and two people would be rolling around in the bed. When that happened, Dave, who was usually holding the clicker, would pick up the clicker and say, oh, I hope they're married, click, and click away to the weather channel. So then he would, after he clicked away, would say, you know what, kids? I hope they're married, but this is really private, and other people should never watch. So just in those slight, every once in a while moments, we were giving them just a little bit of information. I'm still sitting on the floor. Jill is still talking to me about her friend at school. And then she says, Mommy, can I go play? And I said, sure. It was at this point that I realized that maybe we had done the right thing by telling her so early. If we had never said anything to her, then she would have heard this message at school. And what would she have done with it? First of all, probably she would not have come home to tell me about it, because as far as she knew, her mommy didn't know anything about sex. We had never talked about it. Second of all, she may have decided, maybe I will go home with this friend and find out what is going on. That would have been an even bigger problem. Later that night, as I was explaining this story to my husband, I was cleaning the kitchen, and actually, I had a sponge. And I was scrubbing some dishes, and I was looking at the sponge, and I was telling him this very scary story of what had happened with Jill at school that day. But I realized that she had absorbed so many little things in our family from just our small conversations, and that that absorbing of those little things had been her protection. And I thought about how there's a sponge in the mind of Jill, and actually there's a sponge in the mind of all of our children. And you could label that sponge curiosity about sexual things. They're born with this sponge, and they just kind of want to know. They want to know about their bodies and other people's bodies. They want to know how things work, why do people kiss, how do babies get born, how are babies made. They're just curious. They just kind of want to know. The old-fashioned way of relating that information was waiting until they were much older, and then one day knocking on their door, taking the whole pitcher of information called the talk and pouring it on the sponge. Not much of it got absorbed. It was a shocking conversation, and it wasn't helpful. This strategy that we're giving you with the birds and the bees is a strategy that is a drip, drip, drip into the sponge. By God's design, this is how a baby's born, if that's your message. Or because it's healthy and you'll be stronger for it, it's better to wait until marriage. This is how a baby's made. This is how a baby's born. All of the messages, all of the biological facts are getting in there, but at an age-appropriate level and when they're curious or when you're ready to tell them. So it's not just one big conversation. What happens with a full sponge, if you will fill their sponge, is that when another message comes on top of it, it just kind of rolls off. So because we had filled Jill's sponge when she went off to school, her sponge was full, and when, what she heard at school is sex is for 17-year-olds and other people watch. But that didn't sink in and become the core message. It wasn't the first impression of what she knew about sex. We as her family had that first impression already in there, and so that message just kind of rolled off. But if there had been nothing there, if she'd gone off to school with just a dry sponge, then that would have been her first impression of sex. That night, I realized this was a good plan. This was Jill's protection. Yes, it was...
All right. So, I want to go ahead and say I understand that some of you are listening to this woman and your eyes are rolling because you think she's overly simplistic, old-fashioned, prudish, and irrelevant to you. And so it is easy to dismiss people who want to have this nice little tidy world. I think that she's really wise. And the way that she has built conversation upon conversation, whether her message matches your message is beside the point. And she says that in a number of other places. But that we have to... Kid was 5 years old and this happens to them. Happened to her. And she had a capacity to respond to that situation in a smart and safe way because her parents had not been afraid to go ahead and start filling her little five-year-old mind with wisdom and with a way to understand sex in an appropriate way. So I wonder what thoughts come to your mind as you were listening to this lady whose name escapes me. I can't remember her name. Any thoughts? All right. So before we've got just a couple minutes left. I want to... Oh, gosh, there's a lot of ways to go about this. Okay. I want to invite you before we break and then for next week to continue to think about one of their big points is you need to have a message, a succinct statement of what you believe sex is for and what the container, what the right boundaries are for that. And you need to know it and you need to own it. Because that needs to be consistently messaged through all of your, whether they're 5 or 15, it's going to need to be consistent. And that's going to need to be your default and the platform from which you engage in all of your conversations. You need to own it for yourself and you need to own it for your parenting. Then you need to start building, start dripping those drips. Be ready to say and have an answer for where do babies come from. Be ready to build on that conversation of where babies come from later. I've got a 7.5-year-old, and I don't know that she would... I've never talked to her about sex in this way, ever. That she would know that it's meant to be private. That we don't watch people do that. Like, that whole idea is powerful. And finding a way to have that conversation with our kids, no matter how little they are, that could be any of our kids. That could be any of our kids. And if we don't think it's true, we're fooling ourselves. We're naive. So going ahead and preparing and equipping our kids to engage in this and to be safe while not stifling them. Building blocks for healthy later sexuality. We'll talk next week a little bit more about how in girls, fundamentally, we have to instill self-esteem and self-worth and self-value and understanding in girls. With low self-esteem and low understanding of their self-value make bad decisions, are more likely to make decisions or be preyed upon by others. With our boys, respect. Good God, the news out of Baylor this week. I mean, Baylor! Respect, self-control, and don't be dumb, and don't believe locker room talk, and assume, we should teach our boys to assume that anything our friends are saying is, about sex and how, like, awesome they are and their sexual conquest, that they're all full of total crap. And we need to teach our boys that to not believe everything they hear about that. Yeah, that's it. That their buddies are using alternative facts, yes. next week I want to come back to, because we're out of time today, I want to come back to maybe some stages of this, and I want to talk a little bit about where we might go for help around physiology, statistics, and like information. Consent, talking about consent. Good Lord, it's such an important conversation, and if we don't have a conversation about it, colleges are trying to do this, but by 18, 19, 20, too late. Pornography, we're going to talk about pornography next week, speaking of not watching. If you don't think, I know how old some of your kids are, and if you think that they haven't seen pornography or are exposed to pornography, you're fooling yourself. Highly addictive, and starts at a young age. We'll talk about, somebody last week or 2 weeks ago wanted to talk about masturbation, so we'll talk a little bit about that, I hope. Bases, like what are the bases? What's first base? What's second base? What's third base? Like, is oral sex sex? Are we, how do we have a conversation with our kids about, like, what actually is sex? And then protection. Some of these we'll talk about where we can go for resources, because, like, we don't have to be the teacher who knows everything, and I had a great experience when I was 16 of my parents schlepped me off to a group with a bunch of other boys and girls, and we talked about all of this stuff with two counselors, parents slash counselors, and it was massively awkward, so awkward. And I remember all of it. I remember all of it because I was with my peers, and the teachers were just not, they weren't weird about it. They talked about it really matter-of-factly, and it took the stigma off of it. And
one of my friends teaches at the Methodist church down from the 4th and 5th graders.
I took mine at a Presbyterian church.
Yeah, it's intense. Yeah.
I had never heard I don't think I'd ever heard the expression anal sex until I was in this class, and we talked about that.
So when they say the word clitoris, it's just what?
Yes. So I want to share, and so come with, if you know of resources like that, if you know of places we can share, that's the beauty of this class. We can share great resources that are out in community and society. Eventually we want to get into, because lots of this has been framed around baby making, and I want to help bridge the gap that moves beyond procreation and is not heterosexual normative. So talk about, and how do we have a conversation with our kids in which we acknowledge that our kid may not grow up to be opposite sex attracted? And how do we help them even conceptualize that and understand that sex applies in that scenario too? So we'll get to that as we're moving through this. Come next week, having really worked on your message. Yes?
Can I recommend the book that a lot of my friends are using? So
please.
OTT. She's a professor of Christian ethics at Drew University. She wrote a book called Faith Plus Sex, and it's intended to teach people how to talk about sex from a faith perspective, age appropriate, and it is a very progressive approach. At the same time, very wisely attuned to different ages.
Great. We're out of time, I'm aware. So come next week and we'll keep going, all right, with this. Start thinking about what your message is. Boil it down. If you want more information about birds and bees, the videos are like 4 or 5 minutes long. They're easy to watch. Or check out this book by Kate Ott. Or you can borrow resources that I have. We can try to get you what you need that's helpful to you. Thank you.